The following program is part of our 2018 Wisconsin Vote election coverage. Seven justices preside over our state's most important legal cases. One seat on the High Court will be filled on Election Day this Tuesday. Tonight, the candidates running to fill that seat discuss the issues. Live from the Wisconsin Public Television studios, it's the 2018 State Supreme Court Candidate Debate. Here are tonight's moderators, Frederica Freiberg of Here and Now, and Wisconsin Public Radio's Sean Johnson.
Welcome. Three more days until spring election day. For the next hour, we will talk with the candidates running to fill an open seat on the state's high court.
Over the course of the debate, we'll ask questions of the candidates, and the candidates have come prepared to ask a question of their opponent.
The candidates will also spend time in an unmoderated conversation about what it means to be an activist judge.
We welcome the candidates now, Sauk County Judge Michael Skranok and Milwaukee County Judge Rebecca Daly.
Michael Skranok will start things off with his opening statement. Judge.
Thank you. I'm running because I care so deeply about the state of Wisconsin and about the rule of law. I was born and raised here. I went to school here. I've raised my family here, and I've dedicated my professional career to serving the people of this state. I'm a judge now, and I served as an attorney, and I know firsthand the importance of a court upholding the rule of law, protecting public safety, and respecting our Constitution and the separation of powers. I also know the dangers of a court legislating from the bench. You know, judges are not legislators, and neither are we executives. The role of a judge is to apply the law as written, based not on our personal or political beliefs, but based on the statutes and the Constitution. To put it simply, the role of a judge is to be an arbiter of the law, not a policy analyst or a political activist. There's a reason I've been endorsed in this campaign by a bipartisan majority of Wisconsin's sheriffs. It's because they understand that our state's highest court deserves impartial justices, not partisan activists, and I am committed to being that impartial justice.
Rebecca Dallet now with her opening statement.
For almost 23 years, I've served Wisconsin in our state's courtrooms, standing up for victims in some of the toughest cases of rape and child abuse. As a prosecutor, I fought to make our communities safer. As a judge, I make sure the law is upheld and justice is served. My job is to uphold the Constitution and the rule of law. I know the only way to do this is with integrity and independence. For much of my time as a judge, my opponent was acting as a political operative, undermining working families by defending Scott Walker's Act 10, and rigging Wisconsin's legislative districts to benefit big money special interests. Everything we know about him indicates that he will be a rubber stamp for Governor Walker and a champion for the powerful special interests funding his campaign. Wisconsin deserves a justice with the experience and independence to ensure that fairness and justice come first, not political bias and special interests, and I will be that justice.
Thanks for your opening statements. We're going to go now with our first question to Judge Dallet. Over the past couple weeks, Governor Scott Walker has been at odds with three different judges in a lawsuit over special elections for two long vacant legislative seats. One judge ordered Walker to call the elections, and two others rejected the governor's attempts for a delay while the legislature considered a bill to change special election laws. This looked like it could have the makings of a constitutional crisis because the legislature and the governor attempted to erase a court's decision retroactively. The question for you, Judge Dallet, in your opinion, does that undermine the judicial branch?
Well, the importance of the judicial branch is to be that check on the governor and on the legislature, and that's the function of that branch, of this branch. The issue comes when you have someone like my opponent who is receiving special interest money to the tune of $1.3 million from one group, the largest business lobby, and 40% of his campaign donations coming from the Republican Party. That is someone that cannot be fair, that is not going to appear to be fair, and is going to be a rubber stamp and unable to make those tough decisions that our legislative branch must make in making the calls that those judges made in those cases.
Judge Skranok, did what happened this past week, or potentially what almost happened, undermine the judicial branch?
It's an interesting question, and it really raises questions about the functions of the three different branches. We have the legislative branch, the executive branch. Those are our two political branches. The judicial branch was never intended by the people to be a political branch. And so what we had here was we had a statute. The court interpreted the statute and ordered the governor to do something about it. The legislature, at least the legislative leaders, had indicated that they were poised to change the statute and suggested that it would be applied retroactively. Now, without actually seeing the text of the statute that they were going to consider or what might come out of that process, it's hard to say whether it would have impacted the court's order or not. But when the legislature and the governor act, and then that law comes to the court, the only question that the court really is empowered to answer is whether or not they acted lawfully or not, whether the actions that they took exceeded some constitutional boundary. And if the answer is no, that if the actions that they took were lawful, then the court must remain hands off. And when the court interprets a statute and the legislature disagrees with the interpretation of that statute and then changes the statute in response, that's not a fight between the two branches. That's our system of government in play. Because the legislature and the governor set policy by establishing laws. The court then applies those laws as they understand them and as they interpret them. And if the legislature decides that they didn't mean that, that they meant something else, they can rewrite the law, and that's our system.
So I want to ask you both, in 30 seconds, on this particular case, the governor did not appeal to the Supreme Court. He ordered the election, so this issue is resolved. So did the courts get this one right, or were they wrong? Judge Dallet?
Well, what I think is important, again, about this issue is that we have to have a court that we have confidence in that's going to be making the decisions and not being a rubber stamp to the governor or to the executive branch. There's no indication that the court would be that in this case. There's nothing to indicate that. The concerns come when someone like my opponent, who's received the kind of money that he's received from these groups, that he couldn't be fair and impartial, that he would not be able to be that check.
Judge Scranach, did the courts get this one right or wrong?
Yeah, and the answer that I have for that question is the same answer I give to any question regarding a case that I have not had the opportunity to fully explore, read the statute involved, read all of the statutes that might be involved. And so I understand from the press reports that I read some things, but I haven't had a chance to review all of the arguments. What I understand is that the court read the statute, applied the statute as the court understood it to read, and then issued its decision. That's our job. That's exactly what the court should do.
Our next question goes to partisan politics. Your endorsements appear to make clear where your politics lie. Judge Dallet, you are endorsed by Democrats, including the likes of Joe Biden and Eric Holder, unions, Planned Parenthood, and the liberal justices on the court. Judge Scranach, you're endorsed by Republicans, Right to Life, the NRA, conservative justices, and you take campaign contributions from the state Republican Party. If you are truly independent, why speak at the Democratic Convention, for example, or take the Republican Party's money? Why put yourself in these positions? But the question is, actually, and this goes to you, Judge Scranach, first, why should voters believe that you can set aside politics should you be seated on the high court?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, and it's one that the voters should be very concerned about in terms of the answer for both of us. And I have been clear and consistent from day one of this campaign. In fact, I'm the only candidate going all the way back to the three-person primary that has stated repeatedly that my personal beliefs and my personal feelings about any party or any issue have no place in the courtroom. That as a judge now on the circuit court bench, and if I'm privileged to serve as a Wisconsin Supreme Court justice, I must decide every case based solely on the law as I find it and not based on any inclinations that I might have, again, for any party or any issue. Now, my opponent has taken a very different approach to this campaign, and she has, for many months, articulated the values, she calls them values, but the political issues that she cares deeply about. And she's running on those issues. She has indicated on Wisconsin Public Radio's Central Time program that she intended to advocate for the policies that need to be changed in order to advance her political agenda. Now, the reason that I've gotten the endorsements and the support that I have is because I have articulated my judicial philosophy, which includes that I believe strongly that the courts must interpret the Constitution as it was originally intended, and not to amend the Constitution on the fly on a case-by-case basis simply to fit the policy preferences of the individual justices and to reach a desired outcome. And so I have not talked about my political beliefs. I have said that I'm a judicial conservative, and I proudly wear that moniker, and that's because I have the judicial philosophy that I've outlined.
Judge Dallet, same question. Why should voters believe that you can set aside politics should you be seated on the High Court?
Voters should have confidence that I can set aside politics, unlike my opponent who cannot, and that is because of the pledge that I have made. There is money, outside money, coming into these races, much more on the part of my opponent, but I recognize that Eric Holder's group has contributed to furthering my election, and I have made a pledge, and that pledge is that should a case involving that group come in front of the Supreme Court, I will recuse myself. That's what's fair, and that's what shows the voters that I am not going to be bought by any special interest, and I'm not going to do the bidding of anyone. My opponent, on the other hand, refuses to make such a commitment. He refuses to recuse himself from cases involving our state's biggest business lobby, which is contributing to the tune of $1.3 million to his campaign, and the Republican Party, which has contributed hundreds of thousands of dollars to his campaign. 40% of his contributions come from the Republican Party. This is the ad that he is sending out with his arms around the governor, touting his conservative values. I don't think there's any reason for people to have confidence that he's not going to do the bidding of the groups supporting him, like the NRA, like Wisconsin Right to Life, who has an agenda to change our reproductive rights that have been upheld by the law for the last 50 years. I, on the other hand, have made commitments to step off of cases involving the big money interests, and I've made no pledges or promises to get endorsements.
Well, our next question goes to recusals, and that is Sean's question.
Judge Dallet, Wisconsin rules allow a justice to decide themselves whether to step down from a case over campaign contributions from a party that may come before the court. The question, how does this rule protect a litigant's right to have his or her case decided by a justice free of conflicts of interest? Judge Dallet?
Well, part of the campaign that I've talked about since the beginning has been this recusal rule. This rule, that we should all be clear, was written by the largest business lobby for our state that has contributed $1.3 million to my opponent. That rule says he can stay on their cases, which doesn't look fair to anyone. So what we need to do to protect litigants is to have a strong recusal rule, one where these large amounts of money cannot look to decide the outcomes of cases. In the John Doe case, Justice Gableman had $2.25 million spent on his race by a party that sat in front of him on the case, and he applied that rule written by the largest business lobby and said, well, I can hear that case. And then the court shut down that entire investigation, which as a former prosecutor is unheard of, a court doing that. That didn't look fair to anyone, and it's the reason why Wisconsinites have lost faith and confidence in our state's highest court. So it's very important that we talk about a recusal rule. When my opponent talked about policies I'm going to advocate for, that's the policy I'm going to advocate for. Having a strong recusal rule, one that's meaningful and one that everyone understands ahead of time so that they can operate accordingly, and that gives faith and confidence back to our courts.
Judge Scranock, you've talked often in this campaign mentioning that we do have a recusal standard in Wisconsin, but how does that rule protect a litigant who comes before the court?
Yeah, at the very core of our judicial function is the notion of an impartial judiciary. And parties that come in front of the court must have confidence that every judge, circuit court level, every justice on our Supreme Court is impartial and is setting aside any personal or political beliefs that they have, again, about any party or any issue. Now, the question here, as it's been framed, talks about a hypothetical future case. And we can talk about that. But I'm more concerned about, and the voters should be concerned about, what's been happening during this campaign, because there's only one candidate in this race who has been actively receiving contributions from attorneys who are appearing in cases in front of them, and it's my opponent. And she has received over $40,000 in contributions from attorneys who have cases pending in front of them. Some of them have come just days before a hearing. Some of those contributions were made on the very day that a case was assigned to her, and in another case, just 9 days after a case was assigned to her. I understand from J.R. Ross's report on Wispolitics today that she received a $10,000 contribution from attorney Mark Thompson, who's the chair of the Elections Committee. submission the day after the primary, and he has two cases pending in front of her. And so when Judge Dalet talks about her commitment to recusal, it rings a little bit hollow. She promised during this campaign that she never sits on any case involving attorneys that are partners in or serve in her husband's law firm. And the Wisconsin State Journal determined that she had many of those cases and, in fact, didn't step aside from three of them until they pointed it out.
Can I respond?
Go ahead, 30
All
seconds.
All right. So unlike my opponent, who is funded by big money special interests, $1.3 million from Wisconsin Manufacturing Commerce, hundreds of thousands from other groups, including the NRA, including the Republican Party, I have received over 4,000 donations from people all across our state. It does include attorneys, and I am proud of having support of people who appear in front of me, who may win, who may lose, but they support me because they know that I'm the only one that is going to be having the experience and values we need for this position.
Jessica, 30 seconds if you want.
Thank you. My opponent talks about big moneyed interests. What she's not telling the people is that earlier in this campaign, she referred to those interests as the enemy. She referred to groups that are actively engaged in this campaign, as they have the right to do and actually should do if they care deeply about our court, as the enemy. And she has not committed to recuse herself from cases involving those groups or anybody else that's spending in this campaign other than Eric Holder. And if she actually believes that the big money, that the money being spent in a campaign would justify recusal on one side, it really should justify recusal for both of us. That was what was promoted by the petition that the Supreme Court rejected earlier last year.
All right, we leave it there. It is time for us to press pause on questions for the candidates in this round so that the candidates can talk with each other.
The next 6 minutes or so will be an unmoderated conversation between Judge Dalet and Judge Skranok.
By unmoderated, we mean just that. The candidates will have a give-and-take conversation with no interruptions or direction from Sean or from me. We inform the candidates in advance to avoid making speeches during this time. Instead, we hope they will have a conversation on a specific issue, just like voters might across the state this weekend prior to Election Day.
Here's the topic. We ask the candidates to define the label activist judge and to discuss why his or her challenger could meet the definition of an activist judge if seated on the high court.
In keeping with the unmoderated format, we do not even know who might speak first. Candidates, the topic is yours. We will chime in after about 6 minutes.
All right. Well, Judge Dale, I'm looking forward to this conversation. Go ahead.
You first.
All right. Well, the question talks about what is an activist judge, and I think one thing that we both agree on is that to be an activist is to be a judge who is results-oriented. And as I've described, I think you agree, as I've described it, a judge who looks at the case when it comes in, decides the outcome that they want to achieve, and then just finds a path of reasoning to that outcome. Do you agree?
I agree with the definition, yes.
All right. So do you think I would be an activist judge?
Absolutely.
And why is that?
I believe that you would be an activist judge because of the way in which you have shown your views throughout your entire lifetime and career, blocking women's access to health clinics, blocking their lawful right to access health clinics, is an extreme and activist position. And then to be arrested for that, and then to be asked about it during the campaign, your position on it, and to say you've never regretted it. And now also to be backed by the Wisconsin Right for Life, who wants to change the rules, change the laws that allow women to have this ability to access reproductive rights. Those are extremist views. Those are views that are activist. And in addition, with respect to the NRA and your taking this vow to protect firearm freedoms, we still don't know exactly what happened between the two of you, but we know that they sent out a flyer after their bullying letter that they sent out saying someone would be treated hostile if they didn't respond, that said that you vowed to protect their firearm freedoms. And you're backed with big money with all these special interests. And so it's very hard to see how you wouldn't follow the money and follow your extremist positions in making decisions.
Okay. You haven't seen anything from anything that I've done as a judge, though, to suggest that I would do any of that from the bench. You understand you've heard me say that my role in the justice system, in the criminal justice, well, in our judiciary, in our system of justice, changed completely when I became a judge, as you became a judge, and that when I ascended to the bench, I understood that I'm no longer an advocate for any party or any issue that's in front of me. We've had about 9 or 10 months. Have you had a chance to talk with attorneys who appear in front of me? Has anybody suggested that anything I've done would indicate that I would be an activist from the bench?
What I've been able to see is the positions you've taken on this campaign. I've seen that you've made pledges or promises to the NRA vowing to protect their firearm freedoms. I've seen you be asked about this extremist behavior and given an opportunity to disavow at least the unlawfulness of it, and you have not done that. I've also seen with this ad that's being run by your biggest backer, to the tune of $1.3 million, that you are standing by an ad that has re-victimized a family and not standing up to a group that you say you're going to be able to stand up to when you get to the highest court. That's the behavior I've seen during this campaign alone, and that's what gives me great concern that you would absolutely be an activist.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you that our local district attorney wrote a letter to the editor in which he found these claims that you're making to be amusing. That was the word he used. And he said he shouldn't be surprised because he understands they were born of ignorance. You know that I think you'll be an activist, Judge. You understand that's what I believe.
I understand that you believe that anyone that doesn't share your views would be an activist, Judge.
Well, that's not true. But the reason I think that is because you have stated throughout this campaign that voters deserve to know your values. And by values, you talk about political issues. And I don't know why, in the context of a candidacy for the Wisconsin Supreme Court, you would think that the voters should care about should know what your values are, what political issues you hold dear, unless you actually intended to allow them to influence the decisions that you would make from the bench. And then when you have promised to work for policy change from the bench, to me that is the ultimate expression of an intention to be an activist judge.
I understand that you interpret in your mind that when I say policy change, it somehow means activist judge, again, because I think that we have different views, perhaps, on the world. When I said policy change, the policy I've been talking about since day one is changing the recusal rule and being that voice on that court for the rule changes that need to happen in order to help us all function better. You say here that you've not expressed your values in any way, and I just see that as extremely disingenuous. I mean, the conservative values we deserve on the Supreme Court. So I have talked about some of the things that Wisconsinites care about, and they're protected by our Constitution. Things like clean air and water, things like women's right to reproductive health. These are part and parcel of what are protected rights for the people of our state. Those are the values I'm talking about. You're talking about values also, and you're taking positions like being backed by the NRA and vowing to protect their firearm freedoms and taking money from big special interests and taking hundreds of thousands of dollars from the Republican Party. How is that not going to... People don't just give money away. They have an expectation. And I think the viewers all understand that. I think the people in our state understand that. That there is some investment that these groups are making in you in order to get you on the court so that you'll do their bidding.
And you do understand that's not my flyer.
I understand that it says paid for by the Republican Party as an in-kind contribution to Michael Skrenik for Justice. And I know what it's like to take an in-kind contribution. You don't have to take it. So as far as the law is concerned, this is your flyer.
We said that we would chime in after about 6. It's been a little more than that. So we move along. Thank you. The next thing that we want to look at is some ads. In this campaign, 2 television advertisements, one from an outside group, as you know, one from a campaign attack each of you for sentencing decisions in criminal cases. Judge Skrenuk, the ad on your behalf from Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce highlights a sexual assault of a minor case and attacks Judge Dallet for a light sentence. Now, the family of the victim is now calling for that ad to be pulled off the air. The question for you, Judge Skrenuk, is will you ask WMC to pull that ad? Do you disavow it? And if not, why not?
Well, first, I will say that I feel a lot of empathy for the victim's family. And I see victims in my courtroom nearly on a daily basis. And I understand the difficulty that victims face as they go through our criminal justice system. And I do all that I can from the bench to try to lessen the impact of what they're going through to the extent that I can from the bench. I also understand personally a little bit about what they're going through. I have a very dear friend who was sexually assaulted when she was a minor. And I've had the opportunity to observe the impact that that's had on her throughout the years. But when we talk about the ads, it's important to understand, first of all, that that was not an ad that was produced by my campaign. We have produced one television ad. It was a very positive ad. It talked about my judicial philosophy and a little bit about my tuba playing because we thought it would lighten the mood a little bit. My opponent, on the other hand, has come out with an attack ad on me talking about sexual assault cases. I think it's unfortunate that this campaign has devolved into that. WMC has been asked to take the ad off of the air, and they've chosen not to. And that's their choice. And I don't ask them to do anything differently, partly because I'm a judge. And as a judge, I don't tell people what to do outside of the courtroom, and I don't weigh in on issues of public interest because that's not the role of a judge.
All right. We leave it there. Judge Dallet, the ad your campaign is airing attacks Judge Skrenuk for his sentences with words like, quote, he let a child predator walk without time. But in both cases, you as judges took the prosecutor's recommendations in these sentences. So the question to you, Judge Dallet, is why go there?
The ad that I'm running is a distinction between myself as a candidate and my opponent. And it includes the lack of experience that my opponent has in the realm of the criminal justice system, and particularly in having been a prosecutor. I'm the only candidate in this race that has been a prosecutor, that has had that experience standing up for victims in tough cases, like sexual assault, sexual predator cases. I prosecuted those for 5 years in two counties, and making those tough decisions. And also highlights really the difference in experience as a judge. I've been a judge for 10 years working in our Wisconsin courtrooms and dedicated my entire career to standing up for victims, protecting the vulnerable, making sure justice is served in our courtrooms in some of the toughest cases. And that is an ad that highlights the distinctions between myself and my opponent.
Are you saying, and just a kind of a brief follow-up here, are you saying, Judge Dallet, that you believe your opponent is soft on crime?
I think that that it's important that the public understand and know the experiences we bring. Mine, having been a prosecutor for 11 years, having worked in our courts for 10 years on tough cases, 11,000 cases. My opponent is a fairly new judge and has never been a prosecutor and has not had those same experiences. I think it's important that the public know that.
Judge Skrenuk, 30 seconds to respond to
Thank
all
you.
Of this.
Yeah, I appreciate that. The Wisconsin, the WISC-TV, Channel 3 here in Madison, did a fact check on Judge Dallet's ad attacking me and found that it was in one respect misleading and in another respect required clarification. When Judge Dallet talks about experience, what she doesn't like to talk about is the fact that I have experience in our Court of Appeals and our Wisconsin Supreme Court. I helped shepherd 13 different cases through our appellate court system, and the work I did as an attorney on those cases mirrors the work that a Supreme Court justice must do when it's deciding cases.
All right, move along.
This next question comes from a retired Wisconsin Appeals Court judge who reminds us that very few Supreme Court cases are unanimous. Some have three or four opinions. He asks, and this goes first to Judge Skrenuk, if there's such a disagreement on what the law really is, how can a new justice follow the law?
That's a great question, and it really gets to the heart of what the role of a justice is. And like I said, I've got experience doing research as an appellate advocate, which is the exact same research that a Supreme Court justice must do. In complex cases, the role of a justice is to research the law, to go where that research takes the justice, and follow it to the outcome, and not to pre-decide the case and not to change course while the research is being done. Now, the reason that we have a panel of justices is because it's not always crystal clear as to what the answer should be. Otherwise, we would have need for just one justice. But what's important is that we understand that when the justice approaches his or her task, that the goal that the justice brings to the table is to set aside any personal or political beliefs about any party or any issue and decide the case based solely on the law. Now, again, what my opponent has said is that she is going to advocate for the policies that need to be changed. And when PolitiFact looked at the statements she made in Central Time, they said the only thing we can conclude is that she was talking about her political agenda, because it came right after she had identified her political agenda as her Wisconsin values, and then she said she would advocate for policy changes to protect those values. A couple weeks ago, she was out in California and made it clear that when she's talking about Wisconsin values, she's talking about San Francisco values, whatever that means. She equated the two, said that San Francisco's values were Wisconsin's values that we lost along the way. Well, as I've been traveling the state since then, people have come up to me and said, San Francisco values are not my values.
Judge Dell, same question.
So in terms of the values that we care about here in Wisconsin and should care about and have lost along the way, that is a fair and independent court. And that's something that we need to get back to, and that we have lost for the lack of having a recusal rule, for having judges that appear to be doing the bidding of the political or other parties that have helped to get them elected through funding. The question about how a new justice can follow the law, the public has to have confidence that that justice is going to do that, that's going to follow the law for everyday Wisconsinites, stand up for the rights that we have protected under our Wisconsin Constitution and under the U.S. Constitution. My opponent is backed by big money special interests, $1.3 million by the biggest business lobby, hundreds of thousands of dollars by the Republican Party, other groups like the NRA. There is no confidence that the law is going to be followed when you're receiving that kind of money. There is a belief in looking at those cases that he would be a rubber stamp to the interests of the governor, the interests of the Republican Party, and the interests of the people that put him there. It is important that a justice is able to stand up to our governor if the governor has done something illegal or unconstitutional, and stand up to our legislature if they've done the same. The people of Wisconsin cannot have faith that my opponent is going to do that.
I'd like to respond.
Go ahead, 30 seconds.
My opponent talks a lot about money in this campaign having the impact of buying a justice and requiring me to do their bidding. She never talks about that on the other side, and she has received vast contributions and outside support from many individuals and groups, and I wonder if she would be willing to commit or agree right here today that she is bought and paid for by the unions, that she is bought and paid for by the Democrat Party of California, that she is bought and paid for by the attorneys that are appearing in front of her and are contributing to her campaign.
Judge Tallett.
I would agree that the people that are supporting my campaign are people. That I stand for the people, people all over the state of Wisconsin who've contributed, working people, people who deserve to have their rights protected under our Constitution. And I have received no contributions from Democratic parties of any state. And those are the people that I'm standing up for, which is very different than the $1.3 million and hundreds of thousands of dollars that we know about from the groups so far that are funding my opponent.
I am told that we are resetting the clock for the next question because we've expanded some of our questions and answers. So and I'm taking up all the time now, but it's going to be a one-minute response is what I'm told from the control room. So here's the question. A 2015 Supreme Court decision ruled the Constitution guarantees a right to same-sex marriage. This followed what polling suggested was a dramatic shift in public support for gay marriage. The question is, and this goes first to Judge Dallet, should the law evolve to account for changing times?
The law needs to evolve to account for changing times. The Constitution is a living document. It's one that applied in 1787, and it applies now today. That is a good example of the law needing to change, and the right to same-sex marriage is an important change that is following what should have happened a long time ago to really protect the interests and rights of people and treat them equally under the law. We have a U.S. Supreme Court decision right now on that very issue that stood up for making sure that this was the law of the land everywhere, that understood that our constitutional rights are protected and that they need to be the rights that carry forward into today's day and age. We can't possibly be living stuck in a time where we didn't have airplanes and we didn't have all kinds of things, the internet, all the things that we have today.
Judge Skrenek, should the law evolve in your mind to account for changing times?
Well, our Constitution is set up to provide for changes in the law to address changing times, and it happens through our political branches. The people have never given the court the authority to change the Constitution, to move those constitutional boundaries, to amend the Constitution on the fly, because justices believe that society's needs have changed. And that's why I'm firmly committed to interpreting the Constitution as it was originally intended. And we leave to the legislative and the executive branches the task of setting policy and responding to societal changes. Now, with respect to the money that my campaign has received, Judge Dallet likes to ignore the fact that I have nearly 4,000 individual contributions that have come in, and 85% of those individual contributions are $100 or less. So this notion that somehow I don't have individuals supporting my campaign doesn't make any sense, and it's not true. But the Greater Wisconsin Committee is spending nearly $1 million, I believe, already in support of my opponent, and I still wonder whether she'll agree that she's bought and paid for by that group and their donors.
We move along even with that. We move along. Sean and I will pause with our questions again now because we asked each candidate to bring a question to ask directly of their opponent. Judge Skrenek, what question do you have for Judge Dallet?
Judge Dallet, there have been reports about the contributions that you've been receiving from attorneys appearing in your case, and some of the circumstances really are concerning to me. There was an attorney that gave a $500 contribution 4 days before you held a hearing in his case. There's another attorney who contributed $100 9 days after his case was transferred over into your court. That was in June. And then in September, he filed a new case. It was assigned to you, and that very same day, then he gave a $500 contribution to your campaign. There was a third case that involved attorneys for both parties contributing. Their contributions straddled a substantive motion that was filed. And then from then on, it almost gave the appearance of a bidding war. My question to you is this. Have you or your campaign been using your court calendar for solicitation of contributions from attorneys? If so, why do you think that's appropriate? And if not, why do these attorneys who depend on you to be fair and impartial seemingly feel compelled to contribute to your campaign in this way?
Well, it's interesting that you asked the question that way, because that's exactly how the Republican Party has framed that question when they filed a baseless complaint against me. So again, I find it very interesting that you've coordinated with the Republican Party to ask that question today. But in response to your question, as I've answered before, I have people supporting me from all over the state, including attorneys. Some of them win in my court, some of them don't. Those attorneys give to campaigns all the time. They do it because they care about our justice system. They care about having fair and independent courts, and they know that I will be fair. They will contribute even if they didn't win the case or not win the case. And there is absolutely zero evidence of me using any calendar to solicit any contributions, nor using my anything associated with my position. That is a baseless complaint that's been filed by the Republican Party, as I stated, in order to really muddle up the real issue here, which is the issue of recusal, which is the issue of a party in a case spending big money to elect a justice and that justice not agreeing, as you will not still agree to step off the case if that party comes in front of the court.
All right. Judge Dallet, what is your question for Judge Scrinock?
My question for Judge Scrinock is that we have talked about this big money that's been coming into these races, and you have yet to this day not given us a firm commitment to, first of all, stand up to the group that's spending $1.3 million on your campaign and running an ad that is re-victimizing a family, and you won't even speak up and stand up to them. And you've refused to take any position to commit to recuse on the cases that are spending the big money right now on your race. So my question is, will you commit right now in front of everyone watching, the viewers, to recuse yourself, to step off of cases where big money has helped to get you elected when that big money is sitting right in front of you in the case?
So, as you know, our judicial system requires us to recuse ourselves, step aside from any case when we determine we cannot be impartial, that whether it's for money that's been contributed, whether it's for any other reason, whether it's because we feel too strongly about a party or an issue in the case. And I have committed over and over and over again, and I have been consistent from the beginning of this campaign, that I do that analysis every day in the circuit court with every case that comes in, and I will commit to do that on the Supreme Court if I'm privileged to serve with every single case and determine whether there's any reason at all why I cannot be impartial. But it is important that in the context of this campaign, we have an elected judiciary, that every individual and every group that wants to participate in this campaign feel free to do so in whatever way they wish without being concerned that their participation in a campaign will require a justice to recuse themselves from their case. Now, you talk a lot about recusal, and you began this campaign talking about the judge's petition, which would require recusal for both of us, for anyone who had contributed $10,000 or more in this campaign. By the time you got to interviewing with Frederica on Here and Now, you were abandoning your support of that petition, and you said, well, massive amounts of money. And then when Eric Holder's group came up and now we're spending $140,000, and you were asked if that was enough, you said, well, it might be enough. You weren't sure exactly. And now this week, when we're on the eve of the election, now you come up with this promise to recuse with respect to Eric Holder's case. But you're not committing to recuse from any case involving WMC or the Republican Party. You've called them your enemies. You've called special interests that are spending money in this campaign the enemy. And yet you just want me to say, well, for the next 10 years, any case that comes up, no matter what, I'll recuse myself. That is not our system, and I will not make that pledge. I do pledge to commit from any case where I determine that I cannot remain impartial.
Judges, we're going to have to end it there. I'm going to move on to the next question, and we're going to give you each 1 minute to respond to these from here on out. This is going to go first to you, Judge Dallet. You started your campaign with a TV ad showing Donald Trump and saying he's attacked our civil rights and our values. What does the president have to do with a campaign for the state high court?
We are at a moment in time right now where our values have been under attack. I've talked about values from the beginning of the campaign, values and experience. That's what my campaign is about. It's about standing up for the values that we hold dear in our state, values like clean air and water, women's rights, equal protection under the law. And these are rights guaranteed to us by our U.S. Constitution and the Constitution of our state. And I'm the only candidate that has the experience we need working for the courts for 23 years in our courts as a prosecutor and a judge, and has the values that we need to stand up and repair the court and to really make sure that those values are protected. That message is how I've started the campaign at the beginning and how I'm continuing to talk about it. And these are what voters should think about. What are the values? Are the values blocking women's access to health care, like my opponents, and receiving contributions from the NRA after vowing to protect their firearm freedoms? That's what people get to choose on April 3rd.
Judge Scrinock, the president and his policies are what most voters are talking about these days. You said you won't talk about President Trump. Why not?
Well, because he doesn't. He's not relevant to this race. This race is about Wisconsin and the future of Wisconsin's court. My opponent talks about the NRA. She knows what I told them. We released the email. I made the same promise to the NRA that I've made to every citizen that I've talked to across the state, and that is that I am committed to upholding the rule of law, to interpreting the Constitution as it was originally intended and not to be inventing new rights, and to respecting the separation of powers. That's the commitment that I make to all of the voters here tonight, and it's what I've been consistently promising throughout this campaign. What's important to think about when you look at this race is that my opponent began last year saying this is non-political, it's nonpartisan, we should keep politics out. She then attacked Donald Trump in her first ad. She's been soliciting endorsements from D.C. politicians in attempt to nationalize this race. She was out in California and was trying to grab onto this notion of a blue wave. She has politicized this race and nationalized it, or at least is attempting to.
We need to leave it there. We move along to our next question. And this one goes first to Judge Dallet again. It comes to us, though, from a former Wisconsin Supreme Court justice, and it is, can you think of a case that a court decided where you disliked the outcome but agreed that the court properly applied the law?
I can think of a case that I've decided where I've disliked the outcome but properly applied the law, yes. And I know the role of a judge, having done this job for 10 years, that my job is to apply the law, to make sure that the legislative intent is there and applied, and only to make a change if there is a violation of rights. So I have applied a law in a situation where the individual was trying to bring a suit, where it was very clear that they couldn't bring the suit because it was what's called a statute of repose. It didn't seem very fair. Their item had been stolen, and it was a $1 million Babe Ruth bat. And it seemed unfair that they couldn't bring the lawsuit because they didn't know who had stolen it. But the legislature was very clear. They were outside of the time limits. I enforced that law, and I had to dismiss the case.
All right. We asked the same question of you, Judge Skrenna. Can you think of a case, and it can be any case, where you disliked the outcome, but the law was applied properly?
Yeah, we have the flag desecration cases. John Wilcox wrote the majority opinion in the Wisconsin case. There was also a Supreme Court case regarding flag burning, where the courts determined that the Constitution protected that activity as protected First Amendment speech. Justice Wilcox, when he wrote the decision in the Wisconsin case, was very clear that he thought the acts were reprehensible and was unfortunate. He thought that the law would protect it, and I agree with him. But it was what the law, the outcome that the law required, and so it was the correct legal outcome. My opponent, when she announced her candidacy, said that she was running to restore balance to the Supreme Court. And the only imbalance that we have on the court is that we have five justices that are committed to upholding the rule of law, and we have two that are viewed as liberal justices that were part of the court back in the mid-2000s when they were issuing decisions that reflected their policy preferences. And that's why I do believe that my opponent would be an activist judge. It's what they are, and it's what she would aspire to be.
The next question goes first to Judge Skrenok. We know justices use the Constitution, the statutes, and precedent to make decisions. But what happens when those tools don't answer the questions? Is there a place for what some might call empathy, putting yourself in the place of people affected by the ruling?
Well, that's a great question. It gets right to the heart of the task of a justice, when interpreting what the law requires. You begin with the Constitution. You then go to the statutes, if there are statutes that apply, and you look at the precedent. I can tell you that in the work that I did as an appellate attorney, I worked on a lot of complex cases. My opponent's right, I worked on the defense of Act 10. There was never an instance when I did the research where the The outcome of that research was that the law was completely unclear, and it was purely just up to the justices to decide the case however they wished. In every case, there's the law either provides an answer that's clear, or it shows what the trajectory of the law is under Wisconsin law and how that trajectory would apply. Now, the reason it's important that justices adhere to that and not just do what the outcomes that they would like is it provides stability and predictability in the law, which our citizens need, our law enforcement community needs. That's why I've gotten the endorsement of 2/3 of Wisconsin sheriffs, because they need stability and predictability in the law and not having the justices simply impose their version of empathy.
Same question to you, Judge Dallet. Is there a place for empathy in judicial decision-making?
When my opponent talks about activist judges, what he is trying to say is use that as a word to mean some kind of a liberal thinking, when in the truth is an activist judge can very much be a conservative judge. An activist is just trying to reach the end result to further an agenda. When you have people backing you, like my opponent does, people who are trying to change the law, who want to change it from the precedent, from the statutes, not abiding by the Constitution, groups like the NRA and Right to Life, and groups that oppose marriage equality, which is the law of the land, as we talked about before, there is real concern that when given the opportunity, my opponent is going to make those changes that those groups want him to make and not follow the law. There is opportunity for judges to be activists, conservative activists, like our court has been and like my opponent would be if elected on our court.
This question goes out first to Judge Skrenek. Do you respect your opponent?
I respect the work that she's done as a prosecutor, and from what I understand what she's done as a judge. She talks a lot about being a mom of teenage daughters, and that is a very respectable thing. There are things that have occurred in this campaign that trouble me greatly. We now are up to 3 different judges or retired judges that have come out publicly, that have articulated that they never endorsed my opponent, yet their names appeared on her endorsement page. Former Court of Appeals Judge Ed Brunner, Judge John Yackel up in Sawyer County, Judge James Babler from Barron County. That's troubling. I mean, that's bread and butter stuff to portray to the public that you have the endorsement of somebody when they haven't given you the endorsement. The concerns about her accepting contributions from attorneys that have cases pending in front of her and thinking that their opponents should believe they're getting a fair shake is troubling.
Judge Dallet, do you respect your opponent?
Well, my opponent has made it clear that he is partisan and that he is backed by the Republican Party, and apparently there are a couple of judges who want to go along with the partisan team. I am running this race to really get away from that and to get to fair and independent courts. The most concerning thing that's happened in this race with respect to my opponent is this inability that he sees in this inability to speak out against this group that is backing him to the tune of $1.3 million when a victim is outed, when a family that wants to have their dignity and respect and their anonymity is being outed by my opponent, not just on an ad, which is still running, but also in Twitter and other places, and he refuses to express any kind of concern or empathy surrounding that. It makes me think that he just doesn't understand either morally or doesn't have the experience to understand the impact of all of that.
Go ahead. I know you've been campaigning against each other here for months, but I'm going to ask you to wrap this up in 30 seconds each. With the election just a few days away, what's the one thing you'd like to rebut that your challenger has said about you, Judge Skrenek?
Well, this notion that I would be a rubber stamp for the governor or the business interests that are supporting my campaign, it's just not true. There's nothing in my judicial record. When I asked her, she indicated that she gave an answer, but it didn't include anything that I've done as a judge. I understand that as a judge, that I am absolutely committed to deciding every case based on the law as I find it, and I must set aside any personal feelings or beliefs.
J- Judge Dallet, 30 seconds.
Well, there's been a lot of things thrown out there by mostly the Republican Party, but at the behest of my opponent, none of it's really stuck. I think that there's been a lot of confusion that my opponent has tried to make surrounding the issue of recusal, surrounding what that means to have this kind of money coming in and not make the commitment that he still refuses to make to step off of cases, and to understand that I have made that commitment and have agreed that I would step off of any case where large amounts of money appear before me as a party in the case.
All right. Thank you both. Finally tonight, we turn to our one-minute closing statements. A coin toss before the program determined that Judge Scrinock will make closing remarks first. Go ahead.
Thank you. The contrast between my opponent and me is clear. I am Wisconsin through and through. I grew up here. I went to UW-Madison and played tuba in the marching band. I raised my family here. I have served local communities in Wisconsin, and I've practiced law in courts all across the state. I am steadfastly committed to upholding the rule of law, respecting the Constitution and the separation of powers, and protecting public safety. My opponent has spent the last month courting East Coast politicians and West Coast money in order to bring San Francisco values to the Badger State, and she stands poised to advocate for her liberal activist agenda from the bench. I'm privileged to have the support of a bipartisan majority of Wisconsin's sheriffs and a number of Wisconsin-based groups and organizations, because my campaign is Wisconsin-focused, and those individuals and groups understand that our highest court deserves impartial justices, not partisan activists, and I'm committed to being that impartial justice.
Judge Dallet has the final closing remarks.
This is a critical time in our nation's history. Special interests, which many of the founding fathers warned us against, have huge power, and I am running to change that. What we've heard today is a political figure that's spouting off the same tired talking points to appeal to the far right wing and further politicize the judiciary as Scott Walker's rubber stamp. My opponent is bought and paid for by the big moneyed special interests that have had far too much influence on our highest court in recent years. My opponent doesn't understand the value of fair and independent courts, a value that is shared not just here in Wisconsin, but across the nation. I have served Wisconsin for more than 20 years. I've helped victims. I've prosecuted criminals. I've upheld the law. I've handled over 10,000 cases, and I've put my values to work. And I'm supported by over 400 elected officials, more than 200 judges. It's time we bring back Wisconsin values of independence and fairness. That's what I'll do as your next Supreme Court justice.
Thanks to you both. That's all for tonight's debate. You can find the debate posted at wisconsinvote.org. I'm Sean Johnson of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Also look for election coverage next week on Here and Now and on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Frederica Freiberg. Good night.